Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Booth 61. Featuring movers and shakers on the Atlanta tech scene, organizations serving the tech market, and the inspired people who lead them. Now here's your host, Ricky Steele.
Welcome to Booth 61, and thank you very much for being here with us today. I am Ricky Steele, and I passionately serve as the Chief Development Officer for Hunter Technical Resources, Atlanta's premier IT staffing firm. And if you don't believe that's true, come see me afterwards, and we'll have a long discussion about that. Anyway, we've got a real exciting show for you tonight, or this afternoon, and I want to jump right in. But first, I must introduce my producer, partner, and an individual that I've grown to really respect over the last couple of weeks, and that's Mr. Kevin Finn. Kevin is our really producer, but he does so many other things. He also hosts his own shows at Business Radio X. But, Kevin, thank you very much for being here today.
It's a pleasure, Ricky, as usual.
Well, jump in if you have a question and just kind of keep us moving along for
hour. These are always exciting.
Well, I'm very excited about today's show on really multiple levels. Our goal in Booth 61 is to build community. We want to allow the rising tide to really lift all the boats. And I truly believe the Atlanta technology community is as giving a community as any that I've seen in my 40 years doing business in Atlanta. Today we have two organizations who really work together to partner and to build a better Atlanta for all of our citizens. Many of you may be familiar with TechBridge. TechBridge is a 10-plus-year-old organization that provides IT consulting services to hundreds of not-for-profits in our community. I'd personally like to spend the next 30 to 45 minutes telling you a lot of great TechBridge stories because I was kind of around in the beginning and watched TechBridge and saw the early days of the digital ball, this, that, and the other. However, I am the host of the show, not the guest, for which you can all probably say amen and hallelujah. So my first guest today is going to be my friend and someone I've admired for a long, long period of time, the CEO of TechBridge, Mr. James Franklin. James, welcome.
Thank you, Ricky. I appreciate you having us here today.
Well, James, a local boy from Calhoun, Georgia, who done good. He's a graduate of the University of Georgia, located in the beautiful classic city of Athens. Can I get a hunker down, Harry Dogs, hunker down? Amen. James also received his MBA from the prestigious University of Maryland's Business School. Now, James is a real-life technology C-level executive who also has a passion to serve. James has been active as a board member at TechBridge and other organizations and eventually became chairman of the board of TechBridge while he was still in the for-profit world. He finally left the for-profit world to join TechBridge full-time a couple of years ago as the CEO, and we're just real excited that he would be here to begin the conversation and allow us to understand what TechBridge does. But then we're very fortunate to also have one of his clients here today, Mr. Austin Dixon, who I'll introduce in a few minutes. But James, you know, give us a couple of 2 or 3 minute overview on what is TechBridge and how did you get to the party?
So TechBridge is a nonprofit that's trying to improve our community through the technology resources present in our community. And we do that through a variety of different ways. First and foremost is fundraising, which is primarily done through our digital ball. And we'll talk more about that later, I'm sure. And then secondly is taking the volunteers, the products, and the services of many of our great supporters and funneling those into the nonprofit community in a way that they can consume it. Because most nonprofits really don't know what kind of technology they need. They can't ask for it. And they can't really consume what you would expect a for-profit company to take advantage of. Either it's too large or it's not appropriate or it's just not packaged up to solve a nonprofit's unique issues. So we're that middleman. We bundle it together and we make sure that they get what they need when they need it. And the outcome and the reason we do it is because we want better nonprofits who have more impact and therefore make our community a better place for everyone. And it's an exciting mission and one I'm really happy to be a part of. And the way I got involved is, as you mentioned, Ricky, I was chairman of the board. And we had a leadership transition, and I sat down with the outgoing CEO and asked her what would make for a good CEO for TechBridge. And she actually said, I think you should consider it. You've been very passionate. You've been involved with TechBridge for 7 years now, 6 years at that time. And she said, I think this would be a good choice for you based upon what I know about you. And after speaking with my wife and doing some soul searching, this was the right place for me. This was my calling.
What I liked about it, and when I first heard you were coming on board, I thought, gosh, that's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. Because having a not-for-profit executive involved in a not-for-profit is very, very smart, and that's the way it's done 90% of the time. But having someone who's a true technologist, and we're working in the technology community, solving technology issues, but our funding comes from the involvement of the CIO community. So you talk the language from the top to the bottom, and I think it's just been a marriage made in heaven, a God thing, if you will.
You may have been in the room with me this morning as I was speaking with Genuine Parts, because we had the exact same conversation. Genuine Parts, I'm very proud to say, is one of our newest sponsors. So they just signed up for our big Digital Ball fundraiser. And so I was speaking with their senior leadership team, with their IT leadership team. And I said, that's really our value proposition for you as a sponsor, is the fact that we do speak your language, whether it's Carrie Bates, who is our development chief development officer. She came from Accenture. You know, most of the people in our organization really come from the business world and therefore speak the business language. And therefore, we can tell our corporate sponsors what it is we need from them to be most impactful in the nonprofit sector.
Well, it's been fantastic. And I remember in the very, very early days, Scott Geller and Steve Lanoz and Jed Mendel, and I'm not sure who all else was there in the very early days, but just a bunch of young folks with a vision and from a community standpoint. And I don't think anyone dreamed back 10, 11 years ago that you would be where you are today. But again, when you create a unique product or service or an offering to a community that needs those services, the sky's the limit, and I think y'all have proven that.
Absolutely, and it's a wonderful feeling that we're actually taking our mission into other communities right now. The support that we're seeing from some of our local organizations, like a Home Depot Foundation and others, are really pushing us to say, we see the good work you do here. You need to take that to other communities, and with their support, it's happening. It's very exciting.
That is exciting. That's something new on me. That is quite exciting. Well, I know that in the way you work with the not-for-profit community, you give them great services at a greatly reduced price from what they would pay from one of the big consulting firms or anyone that does a similar type of service, which is why many not-for-profits don't have the kind of benefits and infrastructure and technology that they would like to have because they just can't afford it. Well, TechBridge, you're a not-for-profit. How do you find the money to be able to do these things?
We do that in a variety of different ways. First and foremost is how much are we discounted? And we spend a lot of effort on that. There's two different lines of business if you think about TechBridge. One is what we do on a managed services side, call it outsourced IT. And Literacy Action is one of our customers on that, so we'll hear more about that later. But that is, we benchmark against leading providers and making sure that we're below market. It varies. We used to say that we're about half price. Actually, the prices in the market have come down. I would say now we're usually about 30% lower than what a comparable product in the marketplace would be. On the application side, we are operating at a dramatic discount from what you would see in the for-profit sector, and there's a couple reasons for that. One is obviously the level of subsidy that we put into it. That's a portion of it. But what's even more significant is the fact that we've built assets that are specific to the nonprofit world, and we leverage those assets heavily so that we don't have to reinvent the wheel every time we're going into a nonprofit. So the fact that we know the nonprofit sector so well means we can come in with a toolkit that provides most of the functionality that they need. And with one project in particular, we actually benchmarked that with Salesforce help. So Salesforce.com came in and took a look at the level of effort and what we were putting together, and they put a six-figure price tag on the project, and it turned out to be a $20,000 project for us. So, but $20,000 is still too much, in my opinion. So we need to get that down pretty low. Obviously, the lower I can make that and the lower our organization can make that, then the bigger impact that we can have and the more nonprofits that can take advantage of it. So we're never satisfied with the level of subsidy and the discounts that are in place. We're always trying to get it cheap as possible and lower.
But having been able to meet a number of your executives, both paid staff and volunteers, and the actual technical people you send out in the streets, you are paying great wages for some very bright people because that's the only way you're going to be able to accomplish your mission.
That's right.
So there's a gap in the middle. How do you fill that gap?
Yep.
Digital Ball and other?
Yeah, and you're right. I have to pay market wages. So what I tell my staff is you will never have a path to riches at TechBridge, unfortunately, but you will be able to get a fair wage. And so I don't in order to get the best and the brightest, I have to make sure that they're not sacrificing, right? But I have to be fair. So, but outside of that, that's still, you're right, there is a gap. And the way we fill that gap is, you already mentioned the Digital Ball. That's a big chunk of it. The second piece is the adoption program that we put in place. And then the third is the negotiations that we do with our sponsors so that they're giving us either services and product at cost or even sometimes way below cost. Due to certain confidentiality, I can't disclose all the foundational support that we get from software companies, but there's some pretty impactful and large software companies that are giving us free product and actually free support with those products. And so we pass all that along to the nonprofits we serve, and therefore it makes a dramatic difference in our ability to deliver at a certain price point. And then, you know, coming back to the adoption program, the adoption program was really the way that we allowed our impact to scale. Because in the past, we had the Digital Ball, which is a wonderful event and really a unique event that's going to be pretty hard to replicate. So our ability to grow and take on more clients was restricted because so much of that Digital Ball subsidy went into everything that we did. So either we had to start charging a lot more for our services or we need to figure out a new creative way to scale. And that's the adoption program. So the adoption program is going strong. Everybody seems to really enjoy the benefits of it, which are first and foremost, write a check so that we can subsidize the services that we provide to a deserving nonprofit. But then secondly, it's get your people involved as well. And for anybody who's been looking at volunteering their IT skills in the nonprofit sector, it's a real challenge. And the reason why is technology's hard. It takes a long time. You can't drop into a project every other Thursday and then leave and it all go well. So, but with this adoption program, since we have the toolkit, we really can plug and play people pretty well. So there's two different flavors. One's the managed services side of the house, and on managed services, we'll organize volunteer visits on a monthly basis. So you kick off early on a Friday once a month, you come to the nonprofit, and we'll set up a calendar of events where we're digging into a particular topic. Maybe one month it will be social media, so we can spend an afternoon figuring out how bringing in a social media expert and figuring out how the nonprofit can take advantage of that. Or maybe it's coming in and looking at a particular technical issue, like maybe some advantages from a networking standpoint, whatever the case may be. And then the volunteer can leave, and we're there to make sure that whatever the good ideas that come out of it and the strategy that comes out of it get actually put into action for the benefit of the nonprofit. And then on the project side, we have a lot of different roles with business analysts, project management, those sort of things. And if the skill set's right, if they have Salesforce or SharePoint or different technologists that want to drop in, since we have the template, it's pretty easy for us to say, all right, we've got 8 hours or 16 hours of work for you to do this one particular piece. So it's working. It's working well, and the community is really embracing it.
Well, working for Hunter Technical Resources, we are an IT staffing provider, and there are not enough people for the jobs that are out there today. The backlog is tremendous for corporations, so I know that it's got to be painful for you. But if a technologist was listening today and did want to volunteer, he's working full-time or as a contractor, but he wanted to donate 2 hours, 3 hours a week or a month, he could contact you at techbridge.org?
So we used to have a volunteer coordinator position.
Okay.
So as people would want to volunteer, they would come to us and we would find a way to get them busy. It ended up being more time managing the volunteer activities actually was getting the benefit out of the volunteers for technology. So the way that we've fixed that and made it so it's good for the volunteer and good for the nonprofit is we've really structured it, and we paired it with funding. So the way it works is I would suggest that person get their corporation involved.
Okay.
Go back to their organization, say, I want to do the adoption program. I believe that this is the kind of culture that our corporate organization needs, and get them engaged. And then if they pair it up with the funding, then that's going to allow allow us to do what we need to do so that the nonprofit's going to benefit from their volunteerism.
Okay. Now, if I was a corporation or an individual listening to this broadcast and I have a passion for the Atlanta Community Food Bank or Hands on Atlanta or the Jerusalem House or any of the great, great not-for-profits we have in the community, I could write a check to TechBridge to take care of some of their technology needs, or I would go through the individual company. Or if I like technology and that's my background, could I meet with you and discuss the companies that need – or not the companies, the not-for-profits that need help, look at your list and decide where I wanted to make my contribution?
Absolutely. So we have two different avenues. One is the corporate sponsors. We actually have a list. Applications are filled out for the nonprofits that want to participate in the adoption program. And we sit down with our corporate sponsors and say, here's all of the needy nonprofits that could benefit from your services. And we also put estimates together on those. So whether it's a managed services, we say, here's how much they need on an annual basis and the portion that we would like you to cover. Typically, that's about $5,000 to $6,000 a year. It's really not a whole lot of money for a nonprofit to get the IT that they need on a monthly basis. And so that's $5,000 to $6,000 for a year for them to get managed services. That's paying about half the bill.
Okay.
On the project side, it varies. It depends on the type of project we're doing. We don't typically include very small programs, small projects, like if they need to have a server upgrade. We don't typically do adoptions for those, but we could. More typically is the total revamp of their operational environment. And think about if you're in the for-profit world and you're listening, and if I came to you and said, we're going to swap out all of your internal systems, all your core systems, so the way that you do grants, the way that you do donors, the way you do volunteers, and we're going to rip all that out, and these are core functions for nonprofits, we're going to put a new system in place. We do that for about $20,000. You know, 25. It depends on the size of the organization, the level of complexity, and the amount of modification. And so a typical ask would be to ask a corporate sponsor to pay half or maybe three-fourths of that cost. So if an individual came to us and said, I still want to give and I want to earmark those, absolutely, we can talk about that. Typically, our individual contributions are not earmarked. And the reason why is it takes a lot of individual contributions to equal one big program, but we're always happy to try and accommodate our donors, absolutely.
Well, get on my soapbox for a half a minute here. If you're a corporation or even an individual that's done well in the community, I would urge you to connect with TechBridge and take a look at it's everything from the Atlanta Community Food Bank, Literacy Action, so many organizations, maybe over 100, that you could choose for, and if your passion is feeding more hungry people or teaching more people how to read or dealing with the tragedies in the community through the HIV or any of the diseases that have just wrecked lives, and that's your passion, help fund the technology that will allow them to do the work that they want to do more effectively, more cost-effectively, but more strategic than they're able to do. And I think that's probably a great segue to moving into our next guest, who's actually one of your clients.
That's correct.
I want to introduce, and this has been a lot of fun for me, just to get to know him by reading his bio and then meeting him today. But we're going to talk a little bit about how TechBridge goes about their business and how it's worked in one particular situation. And I have one of James and TechBridge's clients with me today, Austin Dixon. Austin's the president and CEO of Literacy Action. And as I said, I don't recall in a long time reading a bio that was any more impressive. He's from Waco, Texas, which is a place I've never been, but I'm sure it must be a lot of fun to be from. Where's Waco?
Waco is right in the middle of the state.
Right smack dab in the middle. I've been to Dallas and Houston and Austin and a few other places, but Waco's not one. But he's a graduate of TCU, Texas Christian University, with a Bachelor of Arts in Religion in 2003. And then he moved to the University of Edinburgh, which, what part of Texas is Edinburgh in?
It's in Scotland.
Scotland. That's not even in Texas at all, I don't think. Where he received his Master of Theology in 2005, came back to a university we're all quite proud of, and that is Emory, where in 2007 he received his Master of Divinity. And if 3 degrees wasn't enough, he decided to go to Georgia Tech, which we all know and love Georgia Tech here in our community, where he received his Master of Science in Public Policy in 2009. And I say this without hesitation. Georgia Tech is my favorite college in the entire country not located in Athens, Georgia, beyond any shadow of a doubt. But having not only that, Austin's also worked for some great organizations in our community, including the Community Foundation of Greater Atlanta, United Way, Atlanta Community Food Bank, or worked with them or for them, Action Ministries. He's been an instructor in philosophy for about 5 years at Clayton State, even while he was going to school, and now President CEO of Literacy in Action. That is a full background for a man that is probably younger than one of my children at this point. Austin, welcome to Booth 61. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Well, we're glad to have you. Before we go into the kind of the interchange between you and Tech Bridge and how you and James coordinate what y'all are doing together, give me a brief overview of everything Literacy Action is involved in today.
Sure. Literacy Action, we teach adults how to read, write, and do math. Our mission is to teach adults literacy and life skills for self-sufficiency. Literacy Action has been around since 1968. We were founded in the basement of Central Presbyterian Church downtown with a couple of volunteers wanting to teach some homeless men how to read. And we are now Georgia's oldest and largest nonprofit provider of adult literacy services. We teach about 1,000 students a year, and we operate just like a traditional school in downtown Atlanta in the United Way building, 100 Edgewood.
Well, that is great. What could be greater than teaching a man, woman, or a child to read? But since 1968, that is quite remarkable. How many people do you have that work internally at Literacy Action?
We have 19 staff members. I've got 7 full-time and 12 part-time, and my part-time are all my teachers that teach. Right now we're operating 41 classes this semester, so we've got a lot of teachers covering a lot of ground.
And all of your teachers are part-time, or if someone was a former English or a teacher and wanted to come down and volunteer, do you accept volunteer applications?
Absolutely. All of our classes are taught by 3 people, actually. We have a paid instructor, which teaches every class, and we also have 2 volunteers in every classroom. Most classes are between 18 and 20 students. And there's a lot of group work. Classes meet for 2 hours at a time, twice a week. So there's lots of opportunities for students to work together, but they also need help from more than one individual who's leading the class. So we usually have 3 people, 1 paid, 2 volunteer, running every class. But every class is led by a paid teacher, and we moved to that model maybe 4 years ago to keep consistency of teachers. Sometimes not everybody can commit to 2 hours twice a week for 15 weeks.
Well, that's great. If someone wanted to contact you, I would say it's literacyaction.org.
Yes, sir.
That'd be literacyaction.org. And if there's is there an email address for information at, or is it just Austin at?
You can reach me at adickson, A-D-I-C-K-S-O-N, at literacyaction.org. But if you go to our website, literacyaction.org, you can find out all sorts of information about what we do and how we do it, how you can volunteer, sign up, get a newsletter, et cetera.
Well, that's great. Well, I want to kind of maybe bring James back into the conversation, and I'm going to ask a series of questions that I've thought through over the last couple of days. And I think any of these questions could be answered by either one and perhaps both of you, but from a different perspective. James is the provider. You are his client, and you're both not-for-profit, so there's a financial aspect to both ends of the transaction. But in your opinion, and I think that this will be fairly easy for everyone to understand, but why don't nonprofits spend more money on technology?
That's a really good question, and I know some answers, but there's a lot of answers to that question. The obvious answer is that nonprofits aren't focused on technology. They're focused on mission. So at Literacy Action, for example, we have 1,000 students a year. That's the equivalent of a large high school, and we've got staff who are paid not the highest salaries in the world, but they're there because they're passionate about the work, and we've got to manage a whole lot of work day in and day out. And technology to undergird that programming and that mission is just not the forethought that we have and not on the top of our minds, because we're more concerned about dealing with the poverty and disenfranchisement that's on our doorstep.
So I would think that literacy is just part of what you deal with each student you have. Would that be correct?
That is correct. 96% of the folks that walk in our door live at or below the poverty level, and 80% of the people that walk in our door read at or below the fifth grade level. And everyone is an adult, 16 to 82 years old. So we're dealing with people who have multiple problems, most of all stemming from poverty.
I would have immediately thought my easy answer would have been because we don't have the money. But I love your answer because it's not our mission. You know your mission. You know your heart. And that's why you're being as successful as you are, and that's great. James, how would you describe that in talking to all the nonprofits, not just Austin?
Yeah, I think Austin did a great job. The analogy that I use is if I go up to your typical nonprofit employee and I say, here's $100. I haven't met one yet that would say, this is fantastic because I need to go buy myself a nice new laptop, right? They're going to say, this is fantastic because I'm going to be able to go educate an adult that needs it. I'm going to be able to go feed a child. I'm going to be able to go provide a bed for someone in need. And that's what we want. We want them to be focused on their mission. So that's why we exist, right? Because we think about the way that we can help them in their mission using the tools and the advantages that the community can provide them in the way of technology. And I guess the other reason is the technology, there's not a whole lot of people that are thinking about in the for-profit community and your typical technology company, how can I solve nonprofit issues, right? It's just not what they are consumed with. And therefore, when they come to the traditional nonprofit and say, I want to help, there's that lack of dialogue. They're speaking a different language. You know, the nonprofit is saying, I need to figure out how to run my homeless shelter better, you know, and here's the issues that I deal with on a daily basis, which are really different than the for-profit sector. It's all about maximizing resources when you have very limited resources. You know, it's more like a very small company dialogue. It's bootstrapping. You know, I don't have what I need to accomplish my goals, so how do I do it anyway, right? And then the for-profit sector in the nature of IT is going to come forward and say, well, you know, your equipment's really old. The first thing you need to do is get all new equipment. And the conversation stops there. Well, you know, your network's a mess. Of course you're going to have challenges, so fix that first. Well, they don't have the resources to do it, so that's not the right answer. So we have that dialogue with them. And so partly it's money, right? But there's programs out there to help for the money side. It's just the dialogue never actually happens because the language is so different.
I think part of it, too, is the way that the nonprofit approaches the donor. In Literacy Action's case, 88% of our $1 million budget is based on philanthropy, that is, the goodness of companies, foundations, yeah, and individuals. And most of those entities that I approach for support on a yearly basis are not interested in technology. They're more interested in buying books for our students, paying the rent for a classroom, paying a teacher's salary, helping us keep the lights on, helping to facilitate or open 10 additional classes for the semester, for example. Technology upgrades, infrastructure, servers are not of interest to a lot of donors. And I think nonprofits in general have started to make a better case to funders and to individual donors about why some of those investments are key to the mission. But I think that's the conversation still has a long way to go.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree with that. The donor community drives where the donor dollars go. And it was a challenge for us until we had the adoption program. So when we said that we needed to bring money into our organization so we could redirect it to needy nonprofits for admin expenses, a.k.a., you know, IT, the reaction was, you know, well, I'm just going to give it to the nonprofit directly, and I'm going to say I want it to go to their mission because that's what I feel good about, right? And there's been training in the nonprofit community that, you know, admin expenses are bad. So everybody goes, checks online, sees the admin expenses, and if somebody has admin expense of 5% versus 10%, well, that must be better because more goes to the mission. But that also means that there's a very few funds to reinvest in themselves, right? So we've had that dialogue as well with the foundations here in town. We're starting to educate people about nonprofits need to invest in themselves because if they do, they'll grow, and their ability to make an impact will grow. And leaders like Austin coming in to Literacy Action is a big benefit as well, because there's a new generation of nonprofit leadership that understands that nonprofits need to reinvent themselves, need to invest in themselves, and need to have all of the things that any good for-profit company would expect, like reliability, like scalability, like all the things that we take for granted. So I commend Austin on bringing this fresh perspective.
I think there's a great opportunity for additional collaboration between TechBridge and the not-for-profit community to help sell that story more aggressively. I mean, thank God for unrestricted funds that are given that you can do with how you best see to fit the organization's needs. But gracious, it's really penny-wise and pound-foolish to invest in a new classroom when you could have invested in a server or something, a layer of technology that would have allowed you to save in so many other places. You could have 6 new classrooms and bring in a lot more folks. I mean, I'm only preaching to the choir, but hopefully folks out in the community will be listening that the technology is no longer a nice to have. It is a mission critical, whether you're worth $100 million or $1 billion or you're worth $11.38 and trying to raise money to make this next week's payroll. So I hope that's something that y'all can continue to sell. And I guess it really gets us into the next question. And I think we've probably halfway answered the question, but are nonprofits' technology needs any different than a for-profit company of a similar size?
That's a good question. I think there's a couple ways to answer it, and we might answer it differently. My first cut at that question is no. And I say no because a lot of people feel, or as I understand it, people understand nonprofits work to be very simplistic. And the reality is that we need email and internet. We need it to be fast. We need a data system. We need a contact management system. We print letters like every other company. We mail things like every other company. All of our technology needs, although not as robust as somebody like PricewaterhouseCoopers headquarters or something, we still have a need that every other office environment has to get the work done. And if we don't have that essential technology, then we're not doing the work at the end of the day. So that would be my first instinct.
I would agree with that to a point. You know, Austin's a smart guy. He predicted that I might have a little different take on it. And the back office is very much the same, right? So everybody needs email. Everybody needs calendaring. It's the same across the board. And so I would say the tools are the same. But the way we use those tools are subtly different in the nonprofit sector. And I'll give you an example. Take that application I talked about with that Salesforce came in. The reason Salesforce.com came in and said this is a $100,000-plus project, $100,000-plus project, is because they were going to have to build everything from scratch, because there is no equivalent in the for-profit sector for volunteer management. There is no equivalent for the way we do donor management. We're a vertical like any other vertical. And so just like healthcare companies are going to want functionality and applications that are specific to them, the nonprofit sector has unique needs as well. So from an application standpoint, if we can have the nonprofit-specific functionality that's appropriate for our vertical, then we're going to be able to come in and do a better job and do it more quickly and therefore with less cost.
Let's move along and maybe talk about how TechBridge and Literacy Action first begin working together and kind of what services are you providing them now, James?
So Literacy Action's been a poster child for us of late, actually. They're taking advantage, I think, of almost all of our services. So whether it's managed services, they've been a longtime customer of ours, and we're very proud of the relationship that we have. More recently, they've taken advantage of our Salesforce project and the applications that we develop on that platform. And they've also been adopted as well. So they've been a participant of our adoption program with 2 different adoptions. So they actually had Turner Broadcasting and Bank of America who have contributed funds to make sure Literacy Action gets the technology they need.
Thank you, Turner Broadcasting and Bank of America.
Absolutely.
Good citizens. Thank you all very, very much. What do you see the next? Let me back up a second. What has it meant to you, Austin, to have TechBridge as your partner, as your service provider? You know, you could buy these same services elsewhere, perhaps not be as cost effective. Certainly wouldn't be as from a greater group of individuals by any stretch of the imagination. But what has it meant for you to have TechBridge inside your four walls?
I think my first response is that TechBridge gets us. They get nonprofits. I feel like when I'm interfacing with vendors and other companies on other issues that Literacy Action deals with, I always find myself and my staff explaining, no, we're a nonprofit. We do it this way or we do it that way. And I always feel like I'm educating the vendor about our needs and how we do things, not just for Literacy Action, but in the nonprofit sector here in Atlanta. And so TechBridge, as a nonprofit, understands where we're coming from and understands our needs, as James talked about before. I think what it also means is that we are able to spend more of our donor dollars on the mission at the end of the day. I talked about a minute ago how we would like to spend donor dollars on infrastructure and IT to a certain degree, but through the adoption program, we've actually gotten to save money and divert it directly into programs, which is wonderful. But I think TechBridge also, it's a relationship of managed services. It's the adoption program. It's the connection with companies and the financial and human resources that make all the difference and free us up to be us.
I don't see how you could do any greater endorsement of the relationship than that in any stretch of the imagination. What are you excited about the next 2013 for the rest of this 9 months of this year? Anything you're doing in collaboration to take better advantage of technology internally or just as a mission of both organizations? James talked a little bit about expansion to other cities, but as we're starting to get close to the end of our hour, let's talk about the rest of 2013. Where are each of you going, perhaps together and on your own?
So I'm obviously very excited about additional communities coming on board. We have a lot of work to do there, but that's certainly the direction we're heading. And by doing that, what I'm very excited about is the benefit that we'll have for our community here in Atlanta, because technology is expensive. It's all about scale. It's all about economies of scale. And so the more impact that we can have across a larger footprint, then the more resources we're going to have to benefit everybody. And secondly, if we're doing our job well and if we're doing it on a large enough scale, then we should actually see metrics change that we care about as a community. So I don't feed people. I don't educate people. TechBridge doesn't do that. What we do is enable Austin and his team to do that. So if we're doing our job extraordinarily well, then we should actually see literacy improve across the city, right? So what I'm most excited about is as we get more resources, as we get deeper involved with Literacy Action's mission and our other nonprofits' mission, we can start to figure out how do we use the power of technology. How do we use the same tools that a Coca-Cola or a Turner Broadcasting or a Bank of America are using to add to the bottom line? How do we use these same assets so that we can start to change metrics, right? And how do we get deeper? We're participating and helping a great deal in the homeless space as well with some collaboration with the City of Atlanta and other agencies. And I think we have the opportunity to do that. I think there's a huge amount of latent opportunity that hasn't been seized upon to have technology start driving measurable impact.
I want Austin to answer the same question, but I do want to back up a half a second and say, in reality, we're not in compartmentalized spaces. You are feeding hungry people. You are teaching folks to read. The services that TechBridge are offering and the ministry, if you will, of TechBridge is changing lives all across our community, and we'll do it in other places. And so people are going to receive benefits from the provider that's providing them that would not be provided otherwise. And so you, Carrie, and everyone that works at your organization should go to bed every night very, very proud of what you're doing to make Atlanta and the citizens who live here better. And I thank you for that, James.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your words, but we always try to be very careful and clear how much we respect the mission of our nonprofits and the job that they do every single day to make our community better. And we're not doing their mission, right? We're supporting them. And so out of respect for the nonprofits we serve, I always make it very clear that we're not trying to take credit for what they do on a daily basis. We're just here to help.
I certainly appreciate that. But, Austin, you have the benefit of seeing that firsthand. Tell me about 2013, either technology-wise or just the overall mission. Where do you want to be at the beginning of next year?
Sure. I'll tell you both things because I talked about them yesterday with TechBridge, in fact. For 2013, Literacy Action, our program is extremely efficient in moving low-literate adults to self-sufficiency. So on average, we move a student two grade levels in a 12-month period for $734. If you compare that to how much the school system spends per student per year, it's not even comparable. So what we do at Literacy Action is amazing and efficient and effective. And so the strategy for 2013, 14, and 15 is how do we take what we do, put it in a box, and distribute it everywhere? Because what we have works well, and we do it differently than anybody else, and we're seeing results that no one else is seeing. And that's partly because of the knowledge of our staff and experience of our board and supporters. And so what that means is that we'll be expanding geographically, but we don't have the time, money, or energy to build buildings or even rent buildings. So we're growing through partnerships with other nonprofits. I'm in conversations now in the refugee community in Clarkston and the homeless services community in Gwinnett as two examples of conversations I've had just in the past week, this week, in fact. So the goal for the next few years is to expand geographically with our services and drop these critical literacy services into extant communities that need them. How technology plays into that, one thing we haven't mentioned is that TechBridge helps nonprofits create and implement a technology plan. So all the great things that have happened to us recently, a new server, a new contact management system, Office 365, network switches, stuff I don't even understand. All of that stuff was implementation of a technology plan that existed. Well, we've checked all the boxes off on our technology plan. And first, every nonprofit needs a strong, thought-through technology plan that's regularly updated. And number two, we need to figure out what that technology plan needs to have in it for the future, for this growth that I'm talking about. So yesterday, in fact, I sat down with our liaison at TechBridge, and we started a conversation that we'll have for the next 3 months with our board about creating a new technology plan that undergirds our growth. So what is it that we will need to run 12 literacy classes at one time in Gwinnett County at this one place for six organizations? How do we take what we're doing now mobile, and what are the technological requirements on a minimum level, on an average level, and on an amazing level? Because, of course, it's all the biggest variable in the room is money, mm-hmm. and how can we pay for all that? So it's an interesting conversation, and I think our programmatic direction for the next few years goes hand in hand with our technological technology plan and what TechBridge can help us accomplish.
Well, there's some folks listening right now that if you were sitting face-to-face with them, what would you say? And there are some folks who will download this tomorrow or 6 months from now. What message would you like to convey to them on how they can help you accomplish what you're trying to accomplish? And please give us the website again and any way to contact you. And what would you like to see folks do in addition to perhaps writing a check?
Mm-hmm. The biggest thing people can do for us besides contributing money is reaching out and coming to volunteer. Our volunteers have incredible experiences with the students. The students have to interact with other people while they learn, and it enhances the learning experience. We've had volunteers as a core component of our program since 1968. So our website is literacyaction.org. You can find out all sorts of information about connecting with us and also making a donation. One thing I would say on behalf of Literacy Action and on TechBridge is one thing I say about Literacy Action and education in general is it's the one of the most catalytic investments that one can make. And the reason is because at Literacy Action, for example, if you invest in us and we educate an adult female who has three children in the home, all of a sudden your investment not only in that female but in that household, and that investment is in a household which is existing in a community. And so all of a sudden, your one investment in that one person has expanded to four people and beyond. And I think technology is very much the same way, and James can speak more directly to it. But I think when you invest in something like TechBridge, it's a catalytic investment because that investment is going to affect a nonprofit, and the sphere of influence is only going to expand from there. So it's different than purchasing a pound of canned goods or a bag of food. Not that that's not also important work, but I think investing in education and technology is a different kind of investing and a different kind of giving.
That's exactly right. We call it a shared service, right? So when a contributor makes an investment in TechBridge, what we're doing is building a shared capability that all the nonprofits can leverage. So whether it's doing an application for Literacy Action, the work that we did to implement that for Literacy Action, we harvest all that back out so that the next nonprofit gets the advantage of the good works that were done for Literacy Action.
Well, on behalf of the thousands and thousands of people who will never have the opportunity to thank you personally because they'll never meet either one of you, I want to thank you in their behalf because lives are being changed in our community. This has been a fantastic show. You brought me to tears, and I'm sure you did to some of the people listening. It just was beautiful, and I'm in awe of both of you, and thank you all very much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ricky.
Well, this wraps up another edition of Booth 61. Next week, next Wednesday, we'll have Atlanta's Wonderkin, David Cummings, and his merry band of technology geniuses, Kyle Porter and Johnson Cook, will be joining us. This is Ricky Steele. I'm with Hunter Technical Resources. I've finished my coffee in Booth 61. I hope you'll come back and join me for a fresh cup next week. And again, listen to any of the past shows on Booth 61 with Ricky Steele at Business Radio X. Our benediction today comes from the Book of Numbers. May the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious unto you. May the Lord turn his face toward you and give you peace. Amen. Thank you for dropping in. Have a great day.